And then toward the bottom, which is one of the faster growing categories, is the so-called the robo-advisor. It's more of a digital platform. It's strictly investment management only. You do not have contact to individuals. It's all a digital platform. You can get involved with these for $100 or less.
You're listening to IBKR's Census Security. Find more conversations at ibkrpodcast.com. Please remember, any trading discussions are for information purposes only and are not intended to portray recommendations. Please listen to further disclosures at the end of today's episode. Now, welcome to our show.
Welcome back to the Sense of Security podcast. I'm Cassidy Clement, Senior Manager of SEO and Content at Interactive Brokers. Today, I'm your host for our podcast, and our guest is Steve McNamara, CFA at IBKR Institutional Sales. We're going to discuss what some elements are when selecting a financial advisor. What should you look for? What qualifications should you look for in an advisor? Are there fees? What are the goals for my money? And what am I looking to do when I invest with that cash? So we're going to explore that. Welcome to the program, Steve.
Thank you, Cassidy. Thank you for having me.
Sure. So to start out, as this is your first podcast as being a guest on this channel, what is your industry background?
Well, it's pretty extensive. I started in the late 80s as an equity research analyst and very quickly went over to the institutional investment management side. Did that for about 15 years. Decided to start my own RA back in 2008. Ran that for 7 years. Started some RA consulting and joined Interactive Brokers back in late 2020.
Nice. So to go right into our topic today, our audience usually tends to be a little bit more of the beginning investor. We're trying to lay the groundwork so that you get the little light bulb and move on to your next step for your circumstance and your investment practice. But what exactly is a financial advisor?
Sure. Great question. So I like to think of financial advisors almost like a financial physician or a financial coach. They'll work with you as a client to assess and diagnose your current financial situation. They'll work with you to develop your long-term goals and then develop a strategic plan to help you reach those goals. And then they'll give you investment advice or advice on products or service to help you execute on your plan. And then, of course, they would adjust their strategy working with you and their tactics over time to factor in changes in the market and changes in your situation.
So are there any type of licenses that kind of come with being a financial advisor? I'm sure you have to have some certifications and things like that.
You actually don't have to have a certification, but you have to be registered in most cases. There are designations above and beyond the basic, like a CFA, like a CFP, like a chartered financial consultant. All these are educational programs which take years. And they just really show that the advisor is very serious about his or her learning. And that's really something, given that these programs have been involved for like 20, 30, 40 years, that you really should look for an advisor that has a separate designation above and beyond of just being registered.
So I guess that kind of goes into my other question, which is, you know, what qualifies someone to be an advisor? I know there's a lot of, I guess you could say, like specialization. Somebody might be estate planning or asset allocation or something with your accounting. What exactly would qualify someone, if there's any examples you can give maybe for certain scenarios?
Sure. You know, financial planning is broken up in a lot of different categories, whether it's tax planning or retirement planning, say educational or estate planning. Sometimes they'll even go down to help you with your budgets, your bill paying, and your debt management. Other advisors focus specifically on investment management. Clearly, and some of these can be very, very complicated and complex needs. So you would look for an advisor that has experience, that has successful track record, and hopefully has another designation, which is an educational complement in any one of these particular sub areas.
So when you're looking for a financial advisor, put yourself, I guess, in the shoes of somebody saying, hey, won the lottery, or I have this little lump of money here. What are some items to look at? Credentials, fees, types of advisor, things like that.
Very good question. So there's really two types of advisors, kind of oversimplification. There's advisors that have fiduciary responsibilities to the client, and there's advisors that do not. That's actually a legal definition. And fiduciary means that the advisor has to work in your best interest 100% of the time. And they have to be essentially on the same side of the table as you. Other advisors who are not fiduciaries, they can still be very important. They can still factor in all your needs, but they don't have the legal definition of being a fiduciary. Sometimes that can run into some problems later on. There's really four buckets of advisors. We'll focus on the ones more to this audience, but there's super high-end advisors, really complex need, work with clients with really complex needs. You need $5 or $10 million to get in. The more traditional financial advisory practice is sort of with the high net worth. They want financial planning involved. They want lots of contact, lots of interactions. Typically, you need $500,000 and above to access that kind of advisor. But now, given technology, you've got advisors that can service clients with $50,000 or less with just investable assets. They don't really do a lot of financial planning. They don't really have a lot of contact or meetings with you. And then toward the bottom, which is one of the faster growing categories, is the so-called the robo-advisor. It's more of a digital platform. It's strictly investment management only. You do not have contact to individuals. It's all a digital platform. You can get involved with these for $100 or less. And that's one of the faster growing categories of financial advisory space.
So actually, I was going to bring up the robo-advisory, which is kind of, I guess kind of the talk of the town in a way, because AI, tech, everything like that is just absorbing all different categories of business. But when it comes to some of these, are there things like account minimums and like meeting minimums or maximums that come with some of these financial advisors, regardless of if they're digital or not?
So with digital advisory, the robo-advisory, no, it's strictly investment management, at least at this point. You can start with as little as $10. They're just managing the money, whether it's according to a model portfolio, whether it's AI-driven, whether it's tech-driven. You're just giving them money to manage, and whatever the results are, they are. Typically, you start out that way, at least in the last couple of years. Then when you're complex, when your needs become more complex, you're looking for more financial planning, you would probably move on to an individual advisor who you would actually meet with. Typically, the standard service of an advisor for a client, you know, between, say, $100,000, $250,000, you might meet a couple times a year. They'll work on a plan. It's not a lot of interaction, but they will manage the money. Typically, fees are anywhere from 50 basis points on up to 100 basis points. Plus, they might even layer on a financial planning fee above that. Once you go higher up the curve, when you're actually talking $500,000 and above, typically you have quarterly meetings with the advisor. They typically charge a fee to incorporate all the financial advisory, but sometimes they actually tack that fee on as well. But it's really according to your needs and the intensity of contact that you want as a client that helps to choose which particular type of advisor would make the most sense for you.
Are there certain things that the investor, or I guess in this way, kind of the client, should establish ahead of time before shopping around for an advisor?
Absolutely. The first step would be to actually figure out what kind of services that you really need. What do you really require for your financial situation? You never want to pay for a service that you don't need. So maybe it's only investment management. Maybe it's only financial planning. Maybe it's only a subset of the financial planning, like tax management. So it's really important to understand what you want before you go searching out an advisor. The next step is more or less, what kind of a relationship do you want? What kind of level of intensity of contact do you want? Do you want to farm out the money and be left alone? Or do you want to actually have regular contact with the advisor? Now, on the other side, the advisor may require a particular level of contact for him or her to get involved with you as the client. Some advisors don't want to talk to their clients. They just want to manage the money. So it's really important to get that in sync with your advisor. It's important to understand whether you have a fiduciary relationship with your advisor. And the recommendation would be to ask them to put that in writing. And if they don't or won't, it's probably a good idea to look for a different type of advisor. And then the next step would probably be to focus on, what am I willing to pay? Am I okay with just paying an asset management fee? Am I okay with limiting the fees that they're going to charge me? Do I only want to write a check for a hard dollar fee? So it's really important to establish that up in advance. And lastly, again, one of the more critical things is, what is the advisor's background? There's ways to check the advisor's background, whether it's a FINRA broker check or the SEC advisor search. If that advisor has any kind of regulatory issue in the past, that's listed. And if you see an advisor that has a kind of a checkered regulatory past, it's almost always a good idea to move on.
So some of those financial advisors, as you said, there's going to be ways to check it out, but some of them could be kind of independent, right? They don't all have to be aligned with some larger institution or name, correct?
Correct. There's different types of the firms that advisors affiliate with. There's the traditional larger brokerage firms. Remember those from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, the firms with 15,000 brokers. Most of those do not have fiduciary duties to clients. That's something to consider. They're more representatives of the firm. That's a different legal definition. With the advent of the RIA practice coming into place, starting really in the 80s and growing, those are independent firms. They're owned by individuals. But they also do have to register with the SEC. So if they do have a regulatory hiccup, it will be listed on the SEC website. So we have a very unique industry where anything that sort of goes wrong for us, it has to be reported by the individual and or the firm. So there is a historical record of that. So even if you're independent and you run afoul of the regulatory officials, that will show up in the SEC database.
If you're a investor, let's say, who has a few different ideas of what they want to do with their money or maybe different goals, could you have more than one financial advisor, or is that not as common?
It's less common than it used to be because most financial advisors are full service now. They do offer financial planning. They do offer different styles of investment management. We still see a number of really high level clients that actually work with multiple advisors in multiple areas of expertise. Some folks may want to work with an advisor, but have a tax specialist or particular legal specialist or say a estate planning specialist, because they are kind of unique categories. But typically, to make it easier on you, the client, if you want to have one relationship with a financial advisor to handle all your financial needs, it just makes life a lot easier if you can put it all in one bucket.
Now, this next question's kind of are you ready for a financial advisor type of question? A lot of my research talked about before investing, making sure that you have enough money in a, quote, emergency fund because of the potential of not every investment being the greatest investment ever. So when it comes to that, I'm guessing that refers back to my other question of, you know, what should investors do before they establish the goal of wanting to find a financial advisor. But when it comes to that emergency fund, is that something that financial advisors usually recommend, or is there a certain number? I know sometimes people say the 3 months worth of life expenses, I think it is.
It's anywhere from 3 to 6 months of your monthly bills. You should have a cash reserve just in case something goes wrong. People have various views on that, but I think a minimum of 3 months is what most financial advisors, that's the typical standard approach, 3 months of your living expenses held in cash. So in case there's a job issue or in case there's a health issue, you can pay for emergencies. Once you get beyond that and you have excess cash that you're maybe not just earning interest and enough interest on your bank account or your money market account or whatever it is, you want to invest over the long term. Typically, you'll then look to the markets to do that, the equity markets, the bond markets, you name it. And then typically, if you don't have enough expertise and you're not comfortable for making those decisions on your own, that's when you seek out the financial advisor, not just to help manage the money, but also help you plan your financial future. On the other side of that is just folks who want to do it yourself, and they just want to put money into the market, whether it's in a brokerage account, whether it's where they make all the decisions, whether they put it into a robo account where the system or the AI makes all the decisions. It's really your choice if you want to manage your money yourself and or pick out a different advisor to help you do it. It's really the complexity of your needs that will kind of point you in the right direction of which type of financial advisor you should seek out.
When it comes to understanding how the advisor gets paid, and I know you kind of briefly touched on this in some of your other answers, what are the general structures of how those advisors or robo-advisors get paid when it comes to your portfolio or managing your money?
Sure. There's several different ways that advisors get paid. Traditionally, in the old days, it was commission-based. They were brokers. So they would sell their clients products and or services, and they would get paid in doing so. That can be a potential issue when we talk about the fiduciary aspect of the relationship. Then it moved more in the registered investment advisor world. It was more a fee on assets. So it could be 50 basis points, 100 basis points on the total number of assets. And that's all negotiable. Advisors typically have a stated fee level, but all fees are negotiable. And then if they do financial planning practice, they could charge either a sort of a line item per service, they could charge by the hour, or they could just have a annual $2,500, $5,000 annual fee to do the financial planning. On the lower end, it's because there's less intensity of interaction and because it's a system doing all this, the robo-advisors typically charge very, very low fees because the system does all the work. You really want to understand what your advisor is going to charge you and why they're going to charge you that fee. What are they doing for that fee? Some advisors can, and I see them all the time, they could charge on up to 300 basis points a year. That's a lot of fees. So what are they doing to justify that? Are they investing for you on a passive basis, meaning they're just trying to track a market? Or are they actually trying to be active investors to manage your money, so they're trying to beat the market? Advisors who practice active management typically get paid more because it's much, much more difficult to do. If they're just doing a passive type of investment management approach, managed, then you shouldn't pay them as if they're active managers. That's the real battle today in the advisor world, is are they justifying their fees for the performance they generate for their clients?
So I guess my final question is really, when an investor starts to think that they have to structure a financial plan with a financial advisor, are there certain things that people don't actually think of out of the gate? Maybe some tips and tricks from somebody as seasoned as yourself?
Sure. You want to have one thing you don't really hear a lot about is the personality match. It really makes sense to interview your advisor directly, because not all personalities are suitable to work together. You want not only want your advisor on your side as a fiduciary with a spotless historical track record, regulatory track record, but you also want somebody that you think you can work with. This is really serious business. And again, it's kind of like the doctor coach approach. If you're not comfortable with a particular doctor or professional or coach, whatever, over time, it's not going to work. So you really want to interview the person up front and see if you have a personality match. Number two, you want to make sure 100% of the time that they are either a fiduciary and they'll put it in writing. And if not, why not? And three, what is their regulatory track record? It's so easy to search now. And unfortunately, there's still a lot of folks in the business who have had problems in the past that still get into trouble. And clients of those advisors, if they'd done their homework in advance, could have avoided that whole thing.
Well, all of these are super great points. And I think everybody can kind of listen to this and find something in there that they probably were like, oh, I probably should look that up before I bring my money to this one particular person or planner. But thank you so much for joining us, Steve.
Oh, my pleasure, Cassidy. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, sure. So as always, listeners can learn more about an array of financial topics for free at ibkrcampus.com. Follow us on your favorite podcast network and feel free to leave us a rating or review. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks for listening to IBKR's Sense of Security. As always, there's more content at ibkrpodcast.com. And if you're interested in learning more about interactive brokers, visit ibkr.com. We offer more trading education content such as webinars, market commentary, market-related courses, and quant-related articles at ibkrcampus.com. The analysis in this material is provided for information only and is not and should not be construed as an offer to sell or the solicitation of an offer to buy any security. To the extent that this material discusses general market activity, industry or sector trends, or other broad-based economic or political conditions, it should not be construed as research or investment advice. To the extent that it includes references to specific securities, commodities, currencies, or other instruments, those references do not constitute a recommendation by IBKR to buy, sell, or hold such investments. This material does not and is not intended to take into account the particular financial conditions, investment objectives, or requirements of individual customers. Before acting on this material, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and, as necessary, seek professional advice. The information in this material is provided for informational purposes only and does not constitute tax advice and cannot be used by the recipient or any other taxpayer to avoid penalties under any federal, state, local, or other tax statutes or regulations, or to resolve any tax issue.